live from Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX. This is Middays with Meg Miller. Interesting people, interesting conversations. And you can join in at 914-636-0110. Now on 1460 WVOX, here is Meg Miller.
Good morning, listeners. Today, my guest is Elizabeth DeRobertis, a personal nutritionist who is also a registered dietitian with a master's degree in clinical nutrition from New York University. Elizabeth and I are going to be talking about diabetes and essential nutrition and weight control to manage diabetes. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for being here. Should I call you? You like to be called Elizabeth?
Elizabeth. Yeah, that's fine. Elizabeth is good.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Who are you?
Sure. So I grew up in Scarsdale, which is actually funny because my practice right now is back in Scarsdale. So I grew up in Scarsdale. I went to NYU undergraduate and graduate, and I've been in private practice for about 10 years. And about 5 years ago, I began to specialize in diabetes.
Okay. Why did you choose diabetes? Nutrition is a broad field. Why diabetes?
I chose diabetes because it's the one of the only diagnoses that nutrition makes a major, major impact on. So I do, cholesterol reduction and blood pressure reduction, and all of those things are great and nutrition is important. But in diabetes, it's especially important because once someone is diagnosed with diabetes, their fate is really in their hands. So if someone follows the proper diet and takes the right steps to control their diabetes, they can prevent all of the complications that happen with diabetes.
Can you give us some of the statistics, Liz?
Sure. The statistics are really staggering. Right now, over 20 million people over the age of 20 have been diagnosed with diabetes, and that's in this country.
Wow.
It's one of the top 10 leading causes of death in the nation, and over $174 billion are spent every year on diabetes. I'll tell you something that's even more staggering. In a given day, 4,000 new cases of diabetes are diagnosed. 600 people die every day from complications of diabetes. 200 people every day undergo an amputation due to diabetes. And 100 new cases of kidney failure occur every day because of diabetes. And the frustrating thing about this is that it's preventable.
Wow,
so
that
all
is
of these complications are preventable.
Are people walking around with diabetes and they don't even know they have it?
Absolutely. About a third of the people that have diabetes do not know that they have it.
So it is preventable and manageable. We're going to talk about it today.
Yes.
Okay, let me begin with, what is diabetes?
Okay, so diabetes happens for a couple of different reasons. One scenario is that the pancreas stops producing insulin. That is not preventable. So if someone's pancreas stops producing insulin, it stops producing insulin, and then they need to supplement with insulin, and we're going to talk a lot more about that. The other scenario is that the person is producing plenty of insulin, their cells have just lost the sensitivity to that insulin, and that usually happens because they're carrying extra weight. And that's the part that's preventable, and that also once they're diagnosed with diabetes, the complications are preventable by following a proper diet and doing a whole bunch of things that we'll talk about today.
That's very interesting. Liz, tell us what the different types of diabetes are.
So there's type 1 diabetes, and there's type 2 diabetes, and there's gestational diabetes. So type 1 diabetes, which used to be known as juvenile diabetes, is when the body is not producing insulin anymore. So someone could have type 2 diabetes, which is considered normally adult onset diabetes, where they're producing insulin, but their cells lose sensitivity to the insulin. And after enough years of having type 2 diabetes, if this person then starts to require insulin, they become like someone with type 1 diabetes. So I like to look at it as either diabetes requiring insulin or not requiring insulin. So typically...
So take us through that a little slower.
Okay.
Type 1
requires insulin.
Requires insulin.
Yes.
Type 2 does not require insulin, but it can change over to type 1 at any point?
It's not usually at any point, and they call it 1.5 or type 2 requiring insulin, but... After enough years of having type 2 diabetes that's not well controlled, the normal progression is that someone may add different and more medications and at some point may need to take insulin. But typically, Type 1 diabetes was diagnosed at a younger age. It usually is a person that's at a normal weight. And type 2 diabetes is usually adult onset and is usually weight related.
So type 1 is only kids?
Not only, though. Typically used to be kids. Now in my practice, we do see a fair amount of 20 and 30-year-olds that are just diagnosed with type 1. So for some reason, their pancreas has stopped producing insulin. And then also, as I mentioned, the adults that after having type 2 may start to take insulin, they're kind of type 1.5.
I see. Let's talk about what the cause of diabetes is.
So there's a couple of different ways, again, that someone could develop diabetes. So it could be an autoimmune type of condition where something is attacking your pancreas. So the pancreas is what produces insulin. And for someone with type 1 and for, you know, a child or in any situation where the pancreas has just stopped producing insulin, it's some sort of either autoimmune reaction. They think at some point maybe there's an infection that causes it. It's not really known what happens, but the pancreas stops producing insulin. The cause of type 2 diabetes is really largely carrying extra weight, but also once someone has a family history, if they have a genetic predisposition to type 2, mm-hmm. They can definitely develop it.
Okay. And what are some of the symptoms that we should be looking for?
Okay. So usually it's excessive thirst, mm-hmm. frequent urination. So these are basically the symptoms of high blood sugar. And whether it's high blood sugar from type 1 or type 2, again, it's usually being very thirsty, urinating a lot, fatigued, you know, tired, sometimes irritable. For type 1 diabetes, where the blood sugar numbers end up very high, mm-hmm. these people are also usually losing weight. So if your blood sugar is very high for an extended period of time, you will lose weight. So if someone has unexplained weight loss, thirst, fatigue, and frequent urination, they should be tested for diabetes.
Why? Why is that? If somebody's blood sugar is high, that they lose weight? How does that work?
When you eat foods that have carbohydrates, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about more in detail in a little while, but when you eat foods with carbohydrates, they turn to sugar in your blood. Mm. And that sugar needs to go from your bloodstream into your cells so your body can use it as energy. Mm-hmm. If you have diabetes and the insulin isn't there or it isn't working properly, the sugar stays in your blood. It doesn't make it into your cells and it ends up being excreted by your body. So you urinate a lot to get the sugar out of your body. Your body's trying to flush the sugar and you end up not being able to use the sugar for energy. You excrete it. So you lose the calories that you are taking in.
Wow, that's amazing. Liz, tell me, is diabetes preventable? And what should one do if they're prone to diabetes or have a family history?
If you have a family history, the most important things for you to do are to manage your weight and to be active.
And we are going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about both of them, but it's very important. And also to be tested, to see a doctor regularly and to be tested to see if your blood sugar has been elevating.
And we had spoken briefly on this. Do the doctors test for it without you asking, or is this something that we need to be asking our doctors?
On a normal routine test, they should be testing glucose. Mm-hmm. They don't always test something which is called a hemoglobin A1C, which we may touch on upon later again.
We will.
But they should be, if you have a family history, your doctor should know about it. Mm-hmm. And it is something that they should test for routinely.
Okay. Why is it important that we understand diabetes?
It's important because there's a lot of misinformation on diabetes. We hear people say all the time, oh, I have a little sugar, or my grandmother had a little sugar. And they don't realize that a little sugar is really very, very damaging to your body.
I see.
The other thing is that some people look at diabetes as a sentence, something that they can't control. They say, my cousin, my aunt, whoever has, they have terrible diabetes and it's not controllable. That really doesn't exist.
Okay.
Anyone can control diabetes. You need to be working with a diabetes specialist, which not everyone does. If you have diabetes, you really want to be seeking the help of an endocrinologist, and you should be working with a dietitian and a diabetes educator. And if you take a team approach and you really understand your diabetes, you can absolutely control it.
Are people who are diagnosed with diabetes, are they working with endocrinologists? Do you find that?
In my practice, because we have endocrinologists there, they do. So I work with the Scarsdale Medical Group, and the doctors are excellent about referring to an endocrinologist for diabetes care. Many practices do not do that. So I do meet patients all the time that have previously been managed by different specialties of doctors, and they don't realize that when they have diabetes, they really need to be going to a diabetes specialist.
And you are a diabetes specialist, are you not?
So I'm a dietitian and a diabetes educator, so I have a role on the team. So I am a diabetes specialist, but they should also be seeing an endocrinologist.
How can someone reach you, Liz?
They can reach me through the Scarsdale Medical Group, which is in Scarsdale. Mm-hmm. They can also reach me through my website, which is nutritionistliz.com.
Okay. If diabetes is untreated, what can happen to an individual?
Terrible, terrible side effects. So if diabetes is untreated, it affects every part of your body. So from your eyes to your kidneys to amputations. So for some people, when they're diagnosed, they do get very scared, which they should get scared, and then they bring their diabetes into control very quickly, and they can prevent all the side effects. So when I see or hear about people that have lost their vision or need amputations or are on dialysis, it's so terrible to hear that, because if their diabetes had been controlled, it would be prevented or at least prolonged as long as possible. One of the endocrinologists that I work with has been in practice for 25 years, and he has never had a patient need to have an amputation because he has helped them to have such good blood sugar control over 25 years that he's never had a patient need to have an amputation.
That's amazing that all of this is treatable, manageable, preventable. You're listening to Middays with Meg Miller. I'm on every Friday from 11 to 12. My guest today is personal nutritionist and diabetes specialist, Elizabeth DeRobertis. If you'd like to call in and speak with Liz, the number is 914-636-0110 or listen live at WVOX.com. Okay, what is the key to the diet for diabetes? Is it calories or sugar or carbohydrates?
It's a very good question.
So thank you.
The key to diabetes is to watch the amount of carbohydrate that you're eating. And it's not the amount in the whole day. It's in the amount on a meal per meal basis.
Okay, you said the carbohydrate.
Yes, when you look at a nutrition label, you're looking at the total carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening with diabetes is that the person's body is having a hard time breaking down too many carbohydrates in one sitting. Okay. So whether it be too many cookies or too much ice cream or even healthy foods. So for example, cereal has carbohydrates and so does milk. And so does fruit. And a lot of people for breakfast will have a bowl of cereal. They'll pour milk in it. They'll put fruit on top. They'll drink a glass of juice with it. And maybe they'll have some toast. All of those foods have carbohydrates. So if a person has diabetes, they need to manage the amount of carbohydrate they eat at each sitting.
How many do you suggest in a meal?
It's different for each person. A very average textbook number would be that a meal should have around 45 to 60 grams of carbohydrate, and that a snack would have around 15 to 20 grams of carbohydrate. But that number really varies from person to person. And the way that we figure out what someone's individual carbohydrate tolerance is by having them test their blood sugar.
Okay. Now, how are we determining how many carbohydrates are in each of these foods? Are we getting it on the food labels? How are we finding this out?
The best way to do it is by looking at the food label. Mm-hmm. And the food label could be confusing. There's lots of information on there. So especially for someone that has type 2 diabetes that needs to lose weight, they do need to be looking at the calories on the food label. And then they're going to look at the total carbohydrates on the food label. And then the third thing that they need to look at is the serving size, because the serving will tell them what the nutrition information pertains to. So for example, if something says that the serving size is half a cup and it has 20 carbohydrates and they eat a whole cup, they're having 40 carbohydrates.
Okay. Now, I was amazed corn has carbohydrates. I knew tomatoes, but who knew corn, right?
Yeah, the starchy vegetables are mm-hmm. corn and potatoes and beans, like black beans, mm-hmm. kidney beans, lima beans. So those are vegetables that do have carbohydrates.
Okay. Can one still enjoy foods they love?
They absolutely can, and it's just a matter of figuring out the best routine or the best way to spread out their carbohydrates during the day. So there's really no foods that are totally restricted. Actually, with the one exception of, I usually tell people that have diabetes that they really should not be drinking any regular soda, nor should anybody, or any juice, because juice is the treatment for low blood sugar. So
I
that
see.
Shows you how quickly it raises your blood sugar. Other than that, all foods can really, really fit. It's just a matter of spacing them out during the day to give your body an opportunity to break them down.
Okay, so give us a couple of examples of foods that are good in managing diabetes.
Okay, so first of all, protein and vegetables really don't affect your blood sugar. So lean protein choices like chicken, turkey, fish, pork, if they're lean, they're okay calorie-wise, they're good for your heart, and they also don't affect your blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Most vegetables do not affect your blood sugar.
Okay.
So then the foods that we're really focusing on are the carbohydrate foods like bread and rice and cereal and pasta and fruit and milk. And the key to these foods is to for the person to decide at each meal what's their priority. Which carbohydrate do they feel like having? So if it's a meal where they're having some pasta, to not also have bread. Mm. Or if it's a snack where they're having a piece of fruit as a snack, to not also drink milk at the same time.
I see.
So to prioritize and choose which carbohydrate is most important to them in that situation.
And does the size of the carbohydrate matter?
It makes a huge difference. That's another really good question.
Thank you.
It should not be all or nothing. So if someone that has diabetes wanted to have a little ice cream or a cookie, if they do it in a responsible way and they have a small amount as a snack, it's usually okay. It's that when we take things in big quantities that it becomes a lot for your body to break down.
So it's when you go to the restaurant and you get a steak and you want the rice and you want a potato and you want the bread is where you're running into all sorts of trouble.
Exactly.
Okay. What do you consider something that you call the perfect portions plate?
The perfect portions plate is a great way to be able to eat all the different foods that you want to eat, but in the right proportions. So what it recommends is that you fill half of your plate with vegetables,
mm-hmm.
and a quarter with protein and a quarter with starch. You can always have a salad on the side, but this way the starch or the carbohydrate is really contained into about a quarter of the plate. And then with half the plate being vegetables, it's a really good tactic to use for weight loss.
Very interesting. And what I also found very interesting is when we go to a restaurant or when we eat at home, we start with the salad. And I just thought that was our culture. But why is starting with a salad a great idea?
It's very helpful for weight loss. There's been so many studies that show if you start your meal with either a salad or a broth-based soup, it's a really good way to lose weight because you're filling up on the part of the meal that has the least calories.
Mm-hmm.
In some cultures, they have the salad last after the meal. And when I work with people in my office, and if they're doing that, if I tell them to move the salad to the beginning of their meal,
mm-hmm.
they usually lose weight just by doing that because if they fill up on the salad, they'll end up eating less of the higher calorie foods.
Wow, that is so interesting, and I find it to be true also. Liz, tell us what role weight plays in managing diabetes.
So with type 2 diabetes, the person, if someone's carrying extra weight, the fat is covering the cells, making the insulin less effective. If a person loses just 5 to 10% of their current weight, their cells will become much more sensitive to the insulin that they're producing and their blood sugar will come down nicely. So losing weight is a really good way to bring your blood sugar down.
Okay, and what is the best way to lose weight in your opinion?
The best way to lose weight is by calorie reduction, and it needs to be reducing extra calories in a way that you can maintain. So I really believe about a lifestyle approach to weight management and that you want to look at the course of your day and figure out where your extra calories are and work to cut out those calories or at least to swap them with lower calorie versions.
Is this hard to do in a fast-paced world that we live in? We're on the run. People barely have time to eat. Is this doable?
It's absolutely doable. And when people come to see me in my office, they're always surprised at almost how achievable it sounds. It could be something as simple as using mustard instead of mayonnaise or buying bread that has 40 calories instead of 100 calories. Or when you go out to eat, getting a fat-free salad dressing or ordering fish instead of steak. So you shouldn't have to shop at special stores or go to special restaurants, and you shouldn't have to avoid doing things with your friends or family. It's just about in each situation, you're going to make a small change to make things a little bit less calories than they normally would be.
Since you brought it up, we can still go to our favorite restaurants. How does one handle that? The menu comes, you're there, you have friends around you. How do you do it?
You want to be selective and decide in the moment which carbohydrates are the most important to you. So here's the worst case scenario. You eat bread on the table and then, before the food comes, and then you either order pasta as your entree, or maybe there's like a big starch side dish, you know, bread on the side too, salad with croutons, dessert. So it could be a nightmare. Or you can be selective and decide if you want to have dessert that night, then your entree should be a lean protein and two vegetables. Or if the bread on the table is so delicious and you want to eat it,
right,
then your entree may be asked to swap the starch for a second vegetable. So you end up with a protein and two vegetables.
So it's about being smart.
And it's about strategic planning. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sounds great. Okay. What role does exercise play in weight loss and in diabetes?
Okay. So exercise is very important for diabetes. Because every time you're active, your blood sugar comes down. Every time you're active, your cells are more sensitive to the insulin that your body is producing.
Say that again. So every time you're active,
your cells have a heightened sensitivity to the insulin that your body is producing.
I see.
Meaning that every time during the day that you're active, your blood sugar is better. For weight loss, it's really important because it helps you to burn extra calories so that if you want to have a little something extra here or there, exercise is a great way to balance it out and to compensate for the extra calories that you take in.
Does it matter what exercise you're doing?
As long as you're moving, I always say that the time of the day should be the time of the day that you're most likely to do it, and the exercise should be something that you hopefully enjoy.
Okay, and how often did you say?
The guidelines say 5 to 7 days a week. There's all different statistics out there. Some people say 60 minutes every day. I always recommend that you just do more than what you're doing now.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back. I'm here with Elizabeth DeRobertis, personal nutritionist and diabetes specialist. I'm Meg Miller. You're listening to Middays with Meg Miller. If you'd like to call in after the break, the number's 914-636-0110 or listen live at WVOX.com. We'll see you after the break.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Jane Metzler. President Bush saying the administration had no choice but to take steps to bail out the troubled financial sector.
Given the precarious state of today's financial markets and their vital importance to the daily lives of the American people, government intervention is not only warranted, it is essential.
The Treasury Department tapping a fund that goes back to the Great Depression, guaranteeing money market mutual funds, also creating a repository for banks' bad debt. Congress has to approve the package. All in favor? Hardly.
This could be the largest bailout in the history of this country. I hope it won't be at the end of the day, but it could be. And is this the end? I don't know. The regulators can't tell us that.
Alabama Republican Senator Richard Shelby saying the cost to taxpayers could top $1 trillion. This is a Fox News alert.
The official car service of WVOX and WVIP is Red Oak Transportation, the true distinction of riding in style and elegance. Based in White Plains, Red Oak Transportation is now the first choice of corporate CEOs and business executives in the New York metro area who rely on this premier car service for on-time, prompt pickup. And you can rely on it too. Red Oak Transportation, family owned and operated for three generations by the Stoppelman family. We invite you to find out why so many discerning travelers now use Red Oak Transportation to the airport, a trip to Manhattan, or for any special occasion. Red Oak Transportation features a full fleet of new town cars, SUVs, vans, and stretch limousines. When you want to ride in style and elegance, call Red Oak Transportation at 914-694-2222. 694-2222. In Westchester, 914-694-2222. Red Oak Transportation, the professionals who go the extra mile.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy with an important word for business owners in our region. These changing times, I think, present a whole new set of problems for proprietors, for owners of independent regional companies. But with all the change, I think, comes new opportunities. And thus, we recommend highly the Alan D. Rosenberg Company. Founded by Alan Rosenberg, he's a wonderful man, as a specialized accounting practice for independent local companies. Alan Rosenberg and Company know the pressures and problems of maintaining and growing a retailer service business in this day and age. With offices in Westchester and in the city, Alan Rosenberg and Company earned their professional spurs for over 30 years now, advising large, very prestigious firms and high net worth individuals, as they're called. And they have a special understanding, thus, of smaller, growing companies, where they are today, I think, unequaled in the field. So if you're satisfied with your present accounting firm and financial advisors, so be it. But if you're looking for a little more brain power from an independent accounting practice where they don't farm it out to a computer, we suggest you call the Alan D. Rosenberg Accounting Firm for a consultation. If you've been feeling it's time your accountant, and I feel like this, spoke your language and was a little more on your wavelength, Alan Rosenberg and Company. The number is 914-722-6901 in the county, or in Manhattan, 212-382-3939. In Westchester, 914-722-6901. Manhattan, 212-382-3939. These guys really know.
Ralph's Wines and Spirits at 498 Forest Avenue at the corner of Playland Parkway in Rye, New York, has almost overnight become the source for fine wines and spirits in the Golden Apple. And now in Westchester, he's become your personal sommelier. Here you'll find over 300 selections, all personally tasted and tested by Ralph, and a full range of half bottles with wine tastings from 4 to 7 every Friday and 2 to 6 every Saturday afternoon. Here at last is a wine store not dictated to by the big distributors, very worthy and agreeable wine start at just $9.95. Also featuring a full line of magnificent Riedel wine glasses in every appropriate size. A wine store like no other in Rye at the corner of Forest and Playland Parkway. For directions to Ralph's, call 914-921-1847. Open Monday through Saturday, 914-921-1847.
You know, many of us are increasing the value in our homes by doing home improvement. And I want to tell you about an important discovery we've made when it comes to home improvement here in Westchester County. His name is Armando Magana. Now, Armando and his crew of skilled workers are our recommendation when it comes to painting, carpentry, or really any home improvement project that you have either inside or outside of your home. You see, Armando is an expert in these projects, both big and small, that require the skill of a professional. So save your precious weekend or weekday time and let Armando fix up the look of your home at a price that's fair and reasonable. You can call Armando Magana at 914-224-6588, and you'll see why Westchester homeowners are raving about this personable home improvement expert. Armando Magana in Westchester, the Bronx, Queens, and Manhattan. Armando will come to you for a fast, free estimate. No job too big, too small. Armando Magana, 914-224-6588.
This program is brought to you by the Westchester County Press, founded in 1928. The County Press is today the only black-owned newspaper in the northern suburbs. Published every week, the County Press is a lively, provocative journal that speaks to the issues and concerns of African-American families of substance and means. This unique publication delivers an upscale, successful, and highly influential readership base for any suburban advertising or marketing campaign. Featuring the irreverent musings of star feature columnist Snoopy Allgood and the thoughtful pronouncements of longtime activist M. Paul Redd, the County Press is one of Westchester's most valuable assets. For advertising and subscription information, an entire year for just $25, call 914-684-0006 or send your check for $25 to the Westchester County Press, Box 152, Elmsford, New York. The number for the publisher and Oriel Redd, the editor, is 684-0006.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We're starting off with clear but cool weather this morning. It'll be sunny skies today with our highs in the upper 60s, northeast winds at 5 to 15. Becoming more easterly off the sound during the afternoon. It'll be mostly clear tonight, nighttime lows into the upper 40s. Sunny weather on Saturday. Now, Saturday's highs will reach the lower 70s. It'll be mostly clear at night in the lower 50s. Sunday sunshine in the upper 70s. And Monday sunshine, upper 60s to near 70 degrees on Monday. So great weather right through the weekend and into early next week. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
1460 WVOX.
Now, more interesting conversation with interesting people. It's Middays with Meg Miller on 1460 WVOX. Once again, here's Meg Miller.
Welcome back to the show. Today, my guest is Elizabeth DeRobertis, and we are talking about good nutrition and managing diabetes. Liz is a diabetes specialist. Welcome back, Liz.
Thank you.
I just want to ask you a little bit more about what is the process that happens once someone is diagnosed with diabetes?
Okay. So once someone is diagnosed, they should identify and seek the help of a diabetes specialist. So they should probably find an endocrinologist at that point.
And what if someone wants to contact you? How do they do that?
Okay, so at our, again, I'm at the Scarsdale Medical Group, mm-hmm. and they can actually, I'll give you the phone number even. It's 914-722-7980. So it's 722-7980, and that's to make an appointment with an endocrinology specialist. So once they're diagnosed, they should identify an endocrinologist.
I was just going to ask you, can they ask for you?
Oh, sure. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they can ask for me. And the steps that they need to take after that point is that they should start to learn how to test their blood sugar.
Okay.
They should follow the right diet, which they can learn about from a dietitian and a diabetes educator, and they should also start to exercise.
Now, testing their blood sugar, is that with a glucose monitor?
Yes, and so this is really important. So testing blood sugar is really the way that someone, that you could know how someone's doing on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So testing blood sugar is one of the most important aspects of diabetes management.
Okay, and how often should someone test their blood glucose levels?
It depends on how well in control their diabetes is. It depends on if they're taking insulin or not. So the general guidelines would be that they test when they wake up in the morning and then 2 hours after their meals. And the guidelines are that when they wake up in the morning, their blood sugar should be 110 or less. And 2 hours after their meals, their blood sugar should be 140 or less.
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, can someone have diabetes and not need insulin?
Absolutely. So
okay, I just heard you say that, and how does that go?
Right, so if someone is taking medications, which we'll talk more about in a few minutes, one of the reasons to test blood sugar is to help the endocrinologist determine what they need in terms of medication. So for example, if someone wakes up in the morning and their blood sugar is too high, but 2 hours after each meal, their blood sugar is okay, then they know to tailor the medication to be something that they could target the medication to be a medication that will work overnight to help their body not produce too much sugar during the night. So to frequently test blood sugar and to bring that log into the endocrinologist or the diabetes specialist really helps the doctor and the diabetes educators to make more informed decisions about medication. It also helps the patient to individualize what they're eating. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned before, there is no pre-written diet that works across the board for diabetes. Every person is different. So if someone experiments with their different meals by testing their blood glucose 2 hours later, again, the guideline is that it should be 140. So they can individualize what they're eating, and the goal is to eat the foods that they like that also give them a good blood sugar.
Okay, that's very interesting. Liz, we have a phone call. Okay. Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
I just tuned into your show. I was listening to your diabetes suggestions on foods. Now, people do favor one food over another. What do you keep away from mainly when it comes to diabetes prevention, so to speak?
What foods do you mainly keep away from?
Keep away from, okay. You want to avoid the really obvious things, as I mentioned, things like soda or juice or iced tea, any sweetened beverages. You also, especially at the beginning, if your diabetes is not well controlled, you do want to cut things out like candy and cake and ice cream until you get your numbers back into an okay range. Then you could work on fitting those foods back in. But I would say for the most part, you really want to look at how many different sources of carbohydrate you eat each time you eat. So to make sure that you're not accumulating too many different carbohydrates, to make
Now, when you refer to carbohydrates, mainly what food does the carbohydrates mainly go into?
Okay, so things like bread and rice and pasta.
Pasta
has carbohydrates. Uh-oh. Yeah. And you know what? It's a good point to talk about now is that even if something is a whole wheat version, so a lot of times people switch from everything white to everything wheat when they find out that they have diabetes, but even the whole wheat versions have carbohydrates too.
Oh, I don't think I even knew that.
And so it doesn't mean that you can't eat these foods. It just means you still need to watch your portions.
Well, and so in other words, if you do everything in moderation, you're fairly safe, in a diabetes situation, if you don't have it presently.
If you do everything in moderation, it's a very healthy way to live, whether it be to prevent diabetes or to control diabetes, is that each meal should provide a balance.
Thank you for your phone call. Okay. What was the A1C and why is that important in regards to diabetes?
Okay, so when you test blood sugar at home, it is very important, but it also shows you what your blood sugar is in that one moment. That's why someone should probably test frequently during the day. Again, when they wake up in the morning, 2 hours after meals, if someone's taking insulin, they do need to test their blood sugar before their meal so they can dose their insulin. So even with that, someone might be testing 8 or 10 times a day. It still doesn't show everything that goes on. So the hemoglobin A1C is a test that's done in the doctor's office, and it's a 3-month test. It's a 3-month average of how someone's blood sugar has been. So it really shows us the big picture on how their blood sugar control has been.
Wow, that is very interesting. It seems as though that you have to stay on top of this, taking your blood levels before each meal. Is it possible to have a positive approach to managing diabetes?
For some people, they actually say that their diagnosis with diabetes is the best thing that's happened to them.
Why would that be true?
It helps them to find a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of people that we work with every week in my practice that eat the foods that they really like, and they have good blood sugar numbers. So I think having a positive approach is very, very important. It shouldn't be looked at as deprivation and saying, oh, I'm never going to eat my favorite foods again. It's about finding a way to fit those foods in.
That sounds great, and I totally agree with that. A positive approach. What was the diabetes control and complications trial study, and why is that important?
It was a very big study that found that control really matters. So the findings from the study were that for people that did control their blood sugar, they had huge reductions in the risk of any of the complications. So it was one of the big studies, but really the biggest that showed that control makes a huge difference in someone's fate in terms of the complications from diabetes.
Okay. Can you talk to me a little bit about what hyperglycemia is, what is hypoglycemia, and why are they important to understand in regards to diabetes?
So hyperglycemia is high blood sugar, and hypoglycemia is low blood sugar. And you could remember that for the O for low. So hypoglycemia is low. And so high blood sugar, the problem with high blood sugar is, that's when the damage is done, when someone's blood sugar is running high for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And high blood sugar doesn't usually feel like anything. Whereas low blood sugar is 70 or less, and so that's hypoglycemia. And someone is not at risk of low blood sugar unless they're either taking insulin or taking medication that's forcing their blood sugar down. So one important point is that if someone is diagnosed with diabetes and they're not taking any medication yet, they do not need to be adding extra food to their day. Sometimes we find people that are adding extra snacks and they're eating before bed because they say, I have diabetes and I need to make sure I don't get low blood sugar. They would not get low blood sugar unless they're taking insulin or taking medication that's forcing their blood sugar down. So low blood sugar, the symptoms would be that they would be shaky and maybe dizzy and feel very hungry. Most people will know immediately if they do have low blood sugar. And a lot of people are afraid of low blood sugar because if their blood sugar really gets too low, you could pass out from it. So The negative part of this is that in the attempt to avoid low blood sugar, a lot of people let their blood sugar stay in a range that's too high. And because high blood sugar doesn't feel bad, but the side effects are really all of these, you know, complications that we're trying to avoid.
And you said the side effect is fainting, or is that when the low blood sugar is too low?
So if someone's blood sugar gets very low, let's say into the 30 range or the 20 range, they could pass out. It's rare that that happens. And it's usually, you know, if someone's taking insulin, they need to be working with a diabetes specialist to help to prevent that from happening. But the side effects of the high blood sugar are really much more devastating because it's all the complications from diabetes.
I see.
But because high blood sugar doesn't necessarily feel bad, some people prefer to keep their numbers in the high range to prevent the low, but it's really not the right thing to do.
Okay. And can you talk to us a little bit about diabetes medications or pills people take?
Yes. So there are a variety of types of diabetes medications, and they work in all different ways. So some of them, some pills will help your body to produce more insulin, and some medications help your body not to produce as much sugar. The medication should really be tailored to the individual patient based on their blood glucose log. So that's another reason to do a good amount of blood sugar testing and bring it into your doctor. It's also important that you discuss with your doctor how you should be taking your medication. So for example, if you're taking a pill, a medication that is telling your body to produce more insulin, you need to take that at the beginning of your meal. Because you take the pill, you produce more insulin, and then you eat.
If you say that again. Take us through that slowly.
Okay.
You take the pill.
You take the pill. Mm-hmm. And when you take the pill, your body starts to produce insulin.
Okay.
And then you need to eat at that time. So if you were taking a medication that told your body to produce insulin and you took that medication and you did not eat, you could get low blood sugar.
Okay.
Another scenario which I see happening more often is that by not taking the medications at the optimal times, they're just not working as well as they should.
Now, what determines whether someone has to inject insulin or takes a pill?
If it's type 2 diabetes, most people start on pills, and they will generally start on a pill that helps their cells to be more sensitive to the insulin that they're producing. If that's not enough, then they'll end up adding, they'll add a medication that helps their body to produce more insulin. Once someone is kind of maxed out on the oral medications, if their blood sugar is still too high, then that's when we'll add insulin. And adding insulin is really is the best thing to do. It's just supplementing the insulin that someone's body is making. It's not bad for you. High blood sugar is bad for you. Insulin is not bad for you.
Okay.
Some people will look at insulin as a punishment, but it's really the way that they can maintain good health.
Why would they look at it as a punishment?
Because they don't like the idea of having to inject themselves during the day.
I see.
But there's a variety of different ways that you can deliver insulin.
You just took my question. I was going to say to you, what are the different ways to give insulin?
So traditionally, it was just through a syringe, you know, using a bottle and drawing up a syringe. In more recent years, they've come out with insulin pens that are really convenient, where the insulin is pre-filled into the pen, and people carry it around in their shirt pocket. So men very often will just have it in their inside pocket of their jacket. It's so easy to carry with you, and it makes administering insulin much easier. And then ideally, the gold standard for insulin delivery at this point is an insulin pump, where the patient puts it on themselves. There's nothing permanently implanted in them. The pump looks like a pager or like, you know, a small cell phone. They wear it on their belt or they keep it in their pocket. The insulin is in the pump. It's connected to the patient with a little tubing. And again, there's nothing permanently on the body. It looks like a little sticker on their body. And every 3 days, they take it off and they put on a new site. And throughout the day when they need insulin, instead of having to give themselves shots, they just dial in the insulin into this little device and it delivers insulin to them.
Well, that's fascinating. But are you saying that there's a little needle that's in them for 3 days and don't they feel that? Is it...
It goes in with a very small introducer needle and the needle actually comes out. So no needle stays in their body. It's a very small little plastic cannula that's inside.
Okay.
It's tiny. It's flimsy. They don't feel it.
How long has that been around?
That's a good question. I think it's over 30 years. Okay. It's been a long time, but in recent years, they keep just optimizing it. There's new pumps coming out all the time. Now there's even pumps that, you know, what we're going to talk about when we get to what's on the horizon. There's some really new, exciting pump features coming out.
Okay, let's keep going. Does everybody take the same amount of insulin?
They should not take the same amount of insulin. And what's important with optimal diabetes control is that everyone's insulin should be individualized, not even on a day-by-day basis, on a meal-by-meal basis. So that's something that a diabetes specialist can help with, is that each person should have their own ratios that they use when they calculate their insulin.
Now, when we were just talking, you were generally people used to prick their finger, they would get the blood, then they would get the reading. There's something else out there that takes the place of having to prick your finger. That's what we were just talking about.
Recently, there's been approval of something that's called continuous blood glucose monitors, or I'm sorry, continuous glucose monitors.
Okay.
It's something that a patient can wear. It goes in as the insulin pump, as I described before, with an introducer needle. The needle comes out.
And so this is that.
So there's a little sensor that will stay in their skin, and it reads their sugar every 5 minutes.
Okay.
And there's a few different devices that are available at this time. Medtronic has one that works with an insulin pump. Abbott has something that was just approved called the Navigator. There's another one called Dexcom. So there's a number of them on the market now, and they read the glucose every 5 minutes, and it gives patients a lot of information about what their blood sugar is doing. They should still test their blood sugar. They should still do finger sticks during the day, but they're able to do them less often.
Okay, so that sounds convenient. Now, is it all the same machine, just different manufacturers, or?
Each machine has different bells and whistles. All of the blood sugar machines, they do basically what they have to do. You know, they test the blood sugar, they give the readings. Some allow the patient to put in if it's before a meal, after a meal. So there's all different bells and whistles.
I see. Liz, tell me, does diabetes stay the same, or can it get worse or even better in some cases?
That's another really good question.
Thank you.
If someone's pancreas isn't producing insulin, that's not going to reverse. But with type 2 diabetes, someone's blood sugar can absolutely get better. They can keep their blood sugar in the non-diabetes range by taking the steps that they need to, such as following a healthy diet, taking the right medication. If someone needed to lose weight and they did lose weight, they can bring their blood sugar back to a normal range. If they don't control their diabetes, yes, it can get worse.
Okay. And what about for a smoker with diabetes? Is it worse for them?
It is worse for them because diabetes affects the circulation, and smoking also affects circulation. So one of the first things that someone should do is they should stop smoking if they get the diagnosis. I mean, they should stop anyway. But if someone has diabetes, they should absolutely stop smoking.
Okay. Can diabetes be cured, Liz?
Right now, there is not a cure for diabetes.
Have they tried?
There's studies going on all the time to try to find a cure for diabetes. It can be controlled, but it can't be cured.
Okay. And do you feel that one can fit diabetes in their lifestyle?
I see people fitting diabetes in their lifestyle every day. People that come into my practice saying, I'm so happy. I never thought that I could do this. I never saw numbers that were this good, you know, and they just prioritize. Let's say, for example, if their kids or their grandkids are going out for ice cream after dinner and they want to go with them and they want to have ice cream, then they won't have carbohydrates with dinner, so they could have the ice cream after dinner. It's just about learning how to exchange one carbohydrate for the other, and then it can absolutely fit in someone's lifestyle.
And what is on the horizon for diabetes?
There's a lot of new advances with the insulin pumps, new technology that's making it even easier to deliver insulin and to deliver insulin either all at once or spaced out to cover high-fat meals. There are these sensors that are, again, reading every 5 minutes and then beaming the blood sugar numbers to the pump. They're working on pumps that will then automatically adjust the amount of insulin that's given based on the sensor reading. So for people that I know that work in the field that either have diabetes or have been working with diabetes for a lot of years, they talk about that in recent times are the greatest advances in technology than they've seen in a long, long time.
Okay. And Liz, where is your practice? How do people reach you? This is, we still have a little bit of time, not much, but this has been a fascinating interview. and I've really enjoyed you being here. If you would just tell my listeners, what is your website? Where can people reach you?
Okay, so the office is called Scarsdale Medical Group,
right,
and it's on Heathcote Road in Scarsdale. And the phone number for the office is 722-7980. To reach me, they can either ask for me there to make an appointment, or they can go on my website, which is nutritionistliz.com. So I will spell it because it's sometimes confusing. It's nutritionistliz.com.
And Liz, is it possible to have diabetes and manage it and have a normal lifestyle? What is it that you want my listeners to know about diabetes, weight control, and good nutrition?
I want for them to take it seriously. If you've been diagnosed with diabetes, I want you to know that you can control it. It should be a team approach. You're not on your own. You should find specialists that work with diabetes to work with you, and that you want to work to achieve good blood sugar numbers. You should be testing, and you should be able to get your blood sugar into a good range. So it is possible, and you just want to work to make that happen.
And there are many good diabetes specialists out there, are there not?
There are many good ones. So my practice is one of them, but there's certainly very good endocrinologists throughout Westchester, New York, everywhere. So they just need to look for a diabetes specialist or an endocrinologist.
Well, this has been a truly fascinating show. Give me the number again, just for in case my listeners didn't get it last time. The phone number?
Okay, it's 914-722-7980.
Okay, terrific. I've been speaking with Elizabeth DeRobertis. It's been a great show. Thank you so much, Liz, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. Maybe you'll come back and fill us in when some of these new things come out.
I would love to.
That's fantastic. This is Midday with Meg Miller. I'm on every Friday from 11 to 12. My guest again was Elizabeth DeRobertis, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you next week. Till then, have a great weekend.